Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. I'm in a wine cellar, which is part of one of the hotels owned by today's guest on Switzerland in Sound, Art Fuhrer. We are in the village of Riederalp, which is above the town of Brieg, in upper German-speaking Canton Valley. It's nestled away, and it's very difficult to even realize that the village exists unless you come up here by cable car. This is a traditional and almost secluded mountain village which has never lost its tradition, but yet it's modern. Art Fuhrer has created modern hotels here, and one of the reasons for that modernism in this very traditional Swiss mountain village in Canton Valley is the fact that Art Fuhrer, whom I've come to know and like very much over the years, and I'm not here for the first time, Art Fuhrer in the early 1960s went to the United States to find his fortune, where he invented ski acrobatics, also known as hot dogging. After several years, a number of years in the United States, after he'd made his money, he came back to Switzerland and got into the hotel business in a big way. Today, his name is synonymous with the hotel trade all over Canton Valley, certainly the German-speaking part of Upper Canton Valley. This is a mountain man. This is a man who loves the mountains. His whole life is here, and as you'll hear, I'm sure, in the next few minutes, this is a man with a great deal of spirituality and a great love for the mountains, and it almost is a religious experience to hear him talking about mountains and his love for them. First of all, Art, this is an obvious question to begin with, and I think it's a fair question to put. What made you go to the United States in the first place?
I escaped to the United States because in those days, skiing was very much militarized and there wasn't too much joy in skiing. It was not enough liberty in skiing. And I was always a skier who believed that the balance is the most important thing, not the force. If somebody had balance, was in balance, he could become a good skier. During those days, people believed it had to be uniformed and force, and the weight,
so-called power skiing.
Power skiing, and the weight had to be on the downhill ski, and the weight had to be on the outside ski.
All technique.
Yeah. And if anybody didn't accept those rules, he was out.
You weren't serious.
I was not serious enough. And as a racer, in those days, I was a ski racer, and I was not always fast enough. Halfway down the run, usually I was very fast, but I didn't always finish in those days. And so I decided to give up ski racing because also my mother, since my father died when I was 14 years old, my mother didn't have the money to go to give me to go on those races. And the ski clubs in the old days, they had no money in this area.
It wasn't like today with sponsors and everything.
Everybody is sponsored for it. And so I decided to quit and to concentrate more on ski techniques. And I got involved in a big war about how to ski and how to instruct. And everybody around me, they realized that I was a special type of a skier, a very light skier, but I had a virus in me which they wouldn't accept in the Swiss ski schools. So they kicked me out all over.
You were a kind of artist on skis. You like to play on skis, you know. You broke the rules.
Right. So I decided to escape. And the idea to go to the United States was actually to learn the language, because in the old days, a ski instructor and mountain guide had to speak English because the clients came from England and from the English part of the world. And I couldn't speak English, not a word, so I decided to go to the States. And in 1959, I took a boat, the Liberty, from Le Havre to New York. And I went way up to the northern part of New Hampshire, to Franconia, New Hampshire, to teach skiing. And I had a job there, an ex-Swiss ski racer by the name of Paul Valère gave me a job. As I arrived up there, he was very disappointed because I couldn't speak a single word in English. And also, I had a cast on my foot because I had an accident just before I left here, a small accident, and the doctor decided to give me a cast to be sure that by the time I arrived over there, everything would be okay.
And we started thinking, what am I going to do with this guy?
Yeah, exactly. That was the problem. Huh? So I was somewhere in the woods, and I couldn't communicate with nobody. So I was concentrating on my skiing, and I showed my tricks, my original tricks.
The things that got you thrown out here.
Right, because I realized, because I couldn't communicate, I couldn't speak to the people, I realized that people were watching, and they were interested in my tricks, and they were trying to do those tricks. And finally, it was a way of communication for me to the Americans through trick skiing.
Real body language,
right,
as they say.
Body language. And I also, in those days, I was the best instructor because I couldn't speak too much. You know, the ski instructors...
you just always showed them what to do.
Right. The ski instructors, they always speak too much and they don't show the exercises nicely, but they speak a lot. They make a whole story out of ski instructions on the skiing. So, actually, I realized that there's a market. And actually, I wanted to go over there just to learn a little bit of the language. And then finally, I stayed there for 13 winter seasons. During the summertime, I always came back to the mountains because I was a man from the mountain, a mountain guide, and I love the mountains, as I still do this. I love the mountain more than anything else. As older you get more touch of the mountains. But anyway, at those days, I built up a business. I got into trick skiing. I became the father of trick skiing. I got involved in films and promotions.
And you had a big following. I mean, you were almost a cult figure there.
Yeah, during my best days in the States, in the prize money field, I think I was at least in the first three personalities.
You were what we could call an exhibition skier. I mean, people paid money to go and see you do what you did. These crazy acrobatics, I mean, these incredible things on skis. Anyone who has seen this actually has to marvel, because it's what you said before. You are violating all of the classic rules of skiing and getting away with it. You know, when you do some of these contorted things and you're expecting that you're going to do a somersault or you're just going to take off and land on the next mountain and, you know, worrying about a terrible accident that's going to happen. It doesn't happen.
I never had an accident.
It's amazing.
And still today, I ski every day and I never had an accident. And because of two reasons, in my opinion. The first reason was I refused to use muscle power. I always skied on balance, the dynamic balance. If the body is in balance, you can have your weight on either ski. You actually need only one, and the other one you can have wherever. And that was a radical idea or proposal. But I stick to it to the day, because always, also, the second point, if I wasn't sure, mentally sure, that I can do it like a flip or a double flip, if I was mentally ready, I never jumped. I would go only if I was ready. And still today, if I go in, I go into many, many, many of avalanche slopes with my customers. And I was never in an avalanche, because I go never in it if I'm not mentally sure that there is no danger. Mm-hmm. It's on one side, it was my agility, the balance, and to believe in not using any kind of force. And the second point, it was mentally.
You just looked at it and said, that's no problem. I can do it. I feel it. I'm in tune with that slope or with that hill or with that mountain.
Right. I remember when I produced approximately 50 ski films, and we did just about anything on skis in ski films. But if I was standing up on top, to make a big jump or something, and I was mentally not ready, 10 cameras could wait below, I wouldn't do it. And I stick to that until today. I would never go into a slope if I'm not convinced that nothing will happen.
It almost sounds a little esoteric, like you have a kind of esoteric feeling, a communication with that slope, with that mountain.
It comes from education and from, actually from my father. I got the feeling of behavior in nature. And even an avalanche, if I get a signal that in that slope is some kind of a danger, if I get the signal, which is a very, very soft and smooth signal, if I don't obey right away at that moment, I get into a risk.
You're really in tune. You are actually in tune in communication with that, with nature.
Yeah, and it happened already many times that I would stand on an edge of an avalanche on top of a slope, and I get this signal, and I don't go. I take another route, and one day later or a few hours later, if I bypass that slope, the avalanche is down. Mm-hmm. So you get some kind of a spiritual signal. Mm-hmm. And it followed me through my whole life.
You have great respect for nature, for the mountain.
Yeah, and I look into every little detail of what happens in the mountains and in nature. And you can learn from every small animal. I give you an example. The last blizzard we had, the big blizzard, 2 days before, I went mountaineering with my wife. We climbed up on skins to a mountain, and I saw on the other side that a whole column of rams going...
The animals.
Going from one side of the mountain down to lower areas. And I said to my wife, in 3 days, we will have a huge water change. And it came precisely because in nature, animals, to survive, the boss, the leaders of those groups, they have a feeling and they can exactly judge situations. And we human beings, we lost a lot of that. And if you go back into nature and you look into the nature, you can learn again. You can make a weather forecast by far better than we get it through the news.
You're part of the nature here. You're part of the mountain. Art, when you came back from the United States, you made your fortune there. You made quite a bit of money. I know you admit this openly. Well, those were the days when the dollar would buy you nearly 5 francs. I think it's not like today. And you decided to do something here, come back to Riederalp, invest in Riederalp, build up. You were a pioneer building up the touristic infrastructure up here with your hotels. I mean, today you are Mr. Riederalp. I mean, your name is synonymous with Riederalp. And just behind us here, we have and above us is the Aletsch Glacier. In front of us, we have a plateau which serves as a golf course in the summer, but it's a wide open area. We have one of the most beautiful views of the Matterhorn that I've ever seen. The entire Valaisan Alps in front of us. It is literally, I use the term advisedly, literally breathtaking. And I know that you travel a great deal. You're known, for example, as a television personality. You were just doing a television show yesterday with German television up on the glacier. And the reason I'm saying is that you always come back. Your heart must really completely be here up on Riederalp, I guess. This is really for you, your spiritual home that you always return to.
Yeah, I think it's similar to the salmon.
always going back to the same spot.
The same spot and also back there to die.
Yep.
So in my career during the years in the United States, especially toward the end of my career, where I was hustling around from one place to another, and I was just collecting dollar, and everything was very, very, very materialistic. And I couldn't stick to that system anymore. It was just a collecting of money to do something with that money in my region and to build up something, not just for myself, but also for the region. And our region, to begin with, it was a very conservative and a very slow-moving region. And the last 20 years or 25 years, I was trying to push all these people to improve, to do more for their customers, to ask the people what they want and give them what they were looking for. I learned marketing in the United States. I was always working for big companies on the marketing side, and in the United States they're very close actually to the customer, and they always say you have to have a product which is wanted, not just produce a product. And we've been producing products in the old days. As an example, we had a menu which pleased the cook in the kitchen, and we never asked if that menu is accepted by the customer. Today, it's just the other way around. We ask the customer, what would you like? And if it's possible, we're going to cook it. So everything has changed totally, and it will even change more. But we're still in a very, very conservative region here, so I'm still fighting a war for it, and also with success, because lots of other establishments and other stations in the Aleutian region, they start to believe in that kind of thinking, and we're improving on the slopes, and we have invested 60, 70 millions of francs just in uphill transportation, in new gondolas and chairlifts. The whole way of thinking in tourism has improved, and we are doing much more for what a customer wants. One example also, lots of people believe that ski resorts should be like Mallorca, or ski resorts should be like Ischgl. Big happenings, big parties, lots of alcohol, noisy music. And they're successful. Like Ischgl, Ischgl is just like Mallorca.
This is in Austria.
In Austria. Yeah. We don't believe in that. We go the other way around, and we come back to the spiritual part of it. Skiing is one part of winter recreation. But sitting somewhere in the sun, looking toward the mountain, feeling the quietness of the surrounding, being on a place by yourself and just listening and looking, it's, in my opinion, for the future, a very, very important thing. And we have to keep on it. We should protect this, because there is enough noise and enough movement and enough happening in everybody's life next to the vacation.
What we need is a real contrast to this, something totally different.
Yeah, people are looking for a contrast. And 20% of our winter guests, as an example, are hikers. And we said we have to produce more hiking paths. And 20% today already are hikers. And they're excellent customers. And maybe in 50 years, we will not have any snow left. Or snow will be a limited product. So we still have to do and work in tourism.
You have to adapt.
Right. And this hiking part, this mountain hiking in the winter, is picking up so tremendously that's really becoming a big market. Mm.
From what we've heard so far, it should become evident that you are a traditionalist, in the sense that you believe in the best aspects of tradition, that some things should not change. But at the same token, you want to innovate, you want to adapt, to adjust to normal changes in life and lifestyle and people, but always resorting back, using as a base the traditions which are so great in this part of Switzerland. Canton Valley, Upper Valley, is perhaps one of the most traditional hotelier places in all of Switzerland, one of the pioneer areas. But all you're saying is, let's innovate, let's adapt, let's evolve and change according to the need. But just so far, you published a biography called, in English, you use the English title, My Way. It's written in German, but you chose the English title, My Way. I guess some of us will think of that famous Frank Sinatra song, My Way. I did it my way. I guess this is what it's all about. This is part of this theme. You're doing it your way.
I'm doing it my way, and I do it the way I believe in it. It's very, very important that you believe in what you do. Coming back to the customers, if we would feel what they want, not just deliver a conventional...
Yeah, just throw it at them.
Yeah. We would have to do much less.
Take it or leave it.
Right. Mm. And many, many times, people are used to spend their vacation at a certain conventional way. Also, that way we have to change. We have to speak to them, show them, introduce new programs, introduce new ideas, and what and simple things, in things you believe. And people, they say, that was fantastic. That's what we want. We also have to change the customers. The great part of the customers are also very conservative. And some of them, they would like to have it the same way as 30 years ago. It doesn't work anymore. All what I do today, from morning to the night, is actually introducing new products, entertaining, telling people we have a program here. In the evening, after the when the ski slopes are closed, we take a gondola, we go up to the top, and then we hike over the Alec Ridge down to Rida Furka, and then we have a nice being together with a fondue, a raclette, whatever you want to eat, and a nice cheddar. And then we take the torches, and then we walk back home. Mm-hmm. That evening, for lots of people, is much more important than anything else, because they never realized this before. They could never feel this. Mm-hmm. And also, being together, singing together. In the old time, we sing in the church together. But there are not so many people going to church anymore. So you have to organize somewhere, even in a restaurant, and in a hut, again, an evening where everybody can participate, mm-hmm, and enjoy being together, singing together on a very, very simple level.
This is a happening, but your kind of a happening, where the spirituality, the being together, the proximity of the mountain, this creation, this nature as you've described it, this is the kind of happening which you are promoting.
That's also, summer and winter, we're trying to do this. In the summertime, as an example, I have a program, four days program, where people come with me down on the first day down to the glacier. We walk over the glacier. We educate them how to walk with crampons on it. Then we have a second day, we go into the gorge of the Masserschlucht. And the third day, I go with those people on a mountain, 4,000 meter high, Alalin, in the region of Saas Fee, 4,000 meter. Everybody says, I can do it. 4,000 meter, I have never been up that high. I said, you can do it. If you follow that education, as we did yesterday, on the glacier, I checked you, you have the physical condition, you have the technique, let's go. And 90%, over 90% of them, I bring up to the top. If they're the first time up on top, 4,000 meters, again, very spiritual, and we come down, back home, that client, that customer, comes back to my place for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. Because,
and blesses you for it.
Right? Because it's something so special. Yeah. They didn't believe in it. I tell them, you can do it. They did it. And they're happy that they come back year after year.
And they wouldn't have believed it themselves if you hadn't pushed them into
it. Yeah. Exactly.
Just finally, Art, I've been up here several times over the years. I remember when your hotel complex was going up in the early 70s. I was here for the opening, and we met for the first time, and I interviewed you then, and I've been back ever since, off and on. One of the past occasions when I was up here, we had an arrangement to do an interview, and I waited in the restaurant, and I got word that you had been slightly delayed, and I understood why. You got up at 3 o'clock that morning. You took a group, you guided a group up to the Monte Rosa on the Italian border. Mm-hmm. You came down 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You took a shower, put on your legendary cowboy hat and cowboy boots, your trademark, and walked around the restaurant visiting guests, shaking hands, sitting down, chatting with them, having a glass of wine with this one and that one, and then talking about skiing and showing skiing films until 11 or 11:30 that night. Now, this would kill most people, this kind of a pace. Where do you get that energy?
With energy, I never had a problem. And I can do if something pleases me. If I'm happy, if I'm organized in my heart properly, energy is no problem. Absolutely no problem. And I can almost work around the clock. As soon as I have to do things which do not please me anymore, and it comes more and more certain things when you get older, if you don't want to do it, then energy becomes also a problem. Then you get a little bit lazy. You ask yourself, why should I do this? Is it necessary that I do that? I have done it so many times and so on. Then you start to become critical. But whenever I feel this in my heart, I try to get this away. As long as my heart is proper, as long as I love the business, as long as I love people, and I really love people, I have no problem with energy.
Self-motivation.
In one spot, I have a problem, and that's a few years ago, I was the last one going out of the hotel in the evening. That was the first in the morning, because I believed only I could do it, and I would have to be there all the time. I changed this.
You start delegating.
I started, because after a certain time in the evening, I wasn't motivated anymore. And if a customer can see that you're not motivated anymore, then you better go on and be somewhere else. And after my accident, I had a bad accident. I fell into a crevasse with the skis, 30 meters into a crevasse. And I survived with absolutely no harm. It was just a miracle. But I was down there for quite a while, and I had time to think about my life. And I decided to change my life in certain respects, in a certain directions. And when I was out of it, in there I decided to write the book. And I started right away to write my book. I started right away to organize and reorganize my life. And one part was in the evenings, after a certain time, I don't want to be there for the customers. I want to be at home with my wife. The kids are all gone. We want to be together. And after 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the evening, you hardly see me anymore. And surprisingly, business runs as good as before, because my followers, my responsible, they do lots of things by far better than I ever did.
So I would say this way, I mean, you were here, you were the pioneering spirit, you started it, you built it up, you provided the basis. And then at this time, this realization you had, it's time now to let someone else take over, to delegate. And they say that's the mark of a good manager, to know when it's time to start delegating things to other people and to stop thinking that only you can do it. You've reached that point.
I reached that point.
Art Fuhrer, the father of ski acrobatics or hot dogging, a pioneer hotelier, a philosopher, a spiritual mountain man who loves the mountains, loves the hotel spirit, and loves tourism. Thank you very much. From Riederalp above Brieg in Upper Canton Valley in southern Switzerland, for Switzerland and Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.